Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. But first, was I was there, the Martin Luther King celebration, and Speaker Voss talks about mandatory sexual harassment training for legis and staff members. Short discussion on nuclear energy here on this campus. And finally, you had snippets from a Democratic candidate forum up north. Was I was there.
If Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. were here today, he would ask you, are you a bridge builder or are you about setting up fences? Dr. King would say, are we building bridges between the races? Are we building bridges between the city and the suburbs? Are we building bridges between the top half of the state and the bottom half of the state? The baton is passed to you. Take that baton and live it out. Then and only then will my words free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last, not be a speech, but reality.
And the thing that is most troubling about this is that Senator Fitzgerald refuses to even say why he thinks these two should be removed, even after the partisan appointments that he has made to these commissions have voiced confidence in both Mr. Bell and in Mr. Haas. And so it leaves one, leaves certainly us, no other conclusion other than he is trying to sweep the last vestige of any nonpartisanship and any fairness and any impartiality from the jurisdictions that now oversee the elections and ethics in the state of Wisconsin just in time for the 2018 election season.
Every single person who works in government or actually in any workplace should feel safe whenever they walk into their place of employment. So we're doing our part in Wisconsin to make sure that we have training for the employees who work inside the legislature. There's a professional who's going to come in. Every single staff person will undergo the training as well as every single legislator. I think that we are doing something that obviously hasn't been done before. It's not the norm around the country, so I certainly am proud that Wisconsin is leading the way to be able to help make that happen.
Right now, if you're African-American, if you're black, for President Trump, the answer is more cops. If you're Hispanic or Mexican, it's build a wall. If you're Muslim, it's travel ban. We have to work together on both sides of the aisle, because whether you're Republican or you're Democrat, that shouldn't matter. Racism is racism, and that should not be tolerated in any parts of society.
The other piece is making sure that we show the moral courage to speak out and name it when it is wrong, and not do what our governor has done and wink and nod at the president and his racism.
Here at the University of Wisconsin, we have a growing research interest focused on molten salt reactors. This is one of the new technologies, what we call Generation 4 technologies, that offers some promise in a number of different aspects with the viability of nuclear energy.
If you can't decide something's a priority in your eighth year as governor, you can't decide something's a priority when it's been out there for 6 years and you're only responding after your former Secretary of Corrections is writing a book, when you won't go visit Lincoln Hills, when you won't meet with a staff that's been brutally beaten and asked for a meeting. So after 6 years of negligence and action, you know, it's time that we get some accountability.
I get it too. It's all about politics. Governor Walker said we'd like to take up a plan and actually fix the problems at Lincoln Hills. What do? Criticize him. If he would have said, let's take it up in the budget, because that's the most responsible time to be able to figure out how we are going to put the resources in, they would criticize him. If he rushed out with a plan, I predict, you know what they would have done? Criticize him. That is what they do 24/7. It's not about good public policy, it's only about good politics. And here, the politics are actually pretty good on our side.
We have a lot of things to talk about, JR, and the first thing I want to talk about is now the governor has reversed his position on closing Lincoln Hills and Copper Lakes. And now he's saying, let's try to do it this session. Now, let's turn back the page a little bit. Wasn't it only 2 weeks ago that he said, let's do it in the course of passage of the 2019-2021 budget?
Yes.
And now he's saying, let's go through the elements. Now he's saying, try this session, which you and I think is going to end in March.
It looks like the Assembly is going to adjourn in February and the Senate in March, so there is a narrow window to get it done. You also have a dynamic where Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has not committed to this plan yet.
Yeah, as we're going to get to in a minute.
From what I was told, Fitzgerald and Voss met this week to kind of talk about the overview, but I don't think they came to a conclusion. And so while Governor Walker is pushing this, and pushing this after he got pushback from Dems saying, why not now?
Yeah.
Why wait till 2019?
Yeah, you saw that press release from the Democratic Party saying, give us a date, Governor, to close these.
And don't forget, Governor Walker would have to win re-election this fall to be able to do this in 2019 rather versus now. But he's doing it after that blowback. So is he reacting to pressure, or is he seeing an opportunity to move this up to try to take this issue and somehow neutralize it, because it's going to be something to deal with this fall?
Yeah, and let's quickly go through the elements of what the governor is now asking. He wants the legislature to create 5 regional facilities. I think 2 or 3 of them would be in southeast Wisconsin.
Yes.
One would be northern Wisconsin.
Line that they want to go north of. They'd also expand a facility in Madison that's now for mental health. People have mental health issues.
Yes, and price tag is potentially $80 million, and turn Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake into a medium security prison. Let's take a minute now. Speaker Voss was asked about this before the session this week in the Assembly, and he basically said, look, we just caucused on this, as you're going to hear in a minute. We agree in concept, but we're negotiating with the counties. Maybe they can play more of a role. Let's listen to a short snippet of what Speaker Voss said.
That's possible. My goal is to make sure that we just had a discussion about it in our caucus, and I think we are united in supporting Governor Walker's goal of saying that we want to have a different method of delivering the reform services that are needed for those people under 18 who've committed a serious crime. We also know that there are other options out there besides just having, you know, a kind of a model that was just state-run. We've already met with the Counties Association. There are other possible innovations which would hopefully accomplish the same goals, perhaps even at a lower cost and with better outcomes. So if we're able to do it by the end of the session, that would be our goal. But I also am not going to set that as a hard, fast deadline.
JR, this is a pretty ambitious plan. Mm-hmm. And as Speaker Voss says, we're still negotiating with the counties. Do you think realistically they can take this up, even if they got Democratic votes, before they adjourn in the spring?
Oh, sure, if they made it a priority, but there are all these issues that go along with it. So you got to pick 5 sites. It's $80 million in general fund supported borrowing to do the 5. The turning Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake into a adult facility is separate from that expense. The site selection process can be, shall we say, difficult at times,
yes,
depending on what we're looking at. We're talking, I think, 30 to 35 beds, somewhere in that neck of the woods for each of the facilities. So it's not like having a big prison in your backyard, but sometimes you get local pushback about that. The governor said they would hire or put out a request for services within the next few weeks
want an RFP
to design the facilities.
Yes.
So there's always issues to deal with, and there's always a question, I guess, that Voss has, can you do it cheaper? What about the counties? Do they have space to hold these guys? Are there better alternatives that way? Because it goes back to one of the philosophies of corrections of, if you keep the offender near his support system, they have better results long term.
Yeah, so with family. Okay, new subject, special elections Tuesday in 10th Senate District. The Democrat, Peggy Schachner, she's a St. Croix County medical examiner, got 54% of the vote and beat an incumbent Republican, Adam Jarko. Now, this was perceived even nationally, mentioned nationally, as a huge upset. Put it in perspective.
It basically gave Democrats hope, this race. And that's why it's so significant in Wisconsin. Now, nationally, it's being looked at as, okay, here's another example of the way that these districts are overperforming for Democrats versus how they performed for Trump just 18 or 16 months ago. But in Wisconsin, think about it, we've had 3 straight cycles, 12 was kind of a wash, 10 was a bad one for Dems, 12 was kind of a wash, 14 was bad, 16 was bad. We finally have an example of Democrats winning a Republican-leaning seat on top of everything else, and not just winning it, but winning by 10 points. So there's all of a sudden now this, like, enthusiasm among the Democrats of, we've got a shot. What was interesting about this race was going in, I think we talked about this before, if the Democrats made an overt play for this seat, like they went in all guns a-blazing and they lost, how do you make the argument then this fall that Terry Moulton's seat, Frank Lissay's old seat, Howard Markline's seat are in play and you can go win those? Now that you've won this seat, you can go to donors and say, look, you should invest in us. We have a shot. This is a plus, like a 53-54% Republican district normally, but we won it by 10 points. That puts all these seats in play.
Trump carried this 10th Senate district by what?
17.1 points in 2016. You look at its overall performance, it's kind of mid-50s-ish, so it gives them this kind of boost. The other thing about this was it's a unique way they ran the race. Democrats didn't want to kind of risk poking the bear, like waking up slumbering Republicans who may have been kind of like, not real happy about Washington, not real happy about President Trump, I'm just going to sit this one out. If they've been doing a big air war, if they've been doing a really aggressive campaigning that was, you saw, it might kind of tip off Republicans. Hey, they're coming. We should get. They worked on digital ads. We saw Eric Holder's group. That's folks from redistricting come in and do $10,000.
And Koch Brothers group was in here with $50,000.
Well, I was on the other
on
side.
On behalf of Jarko.
Yes. So we saw like a targeted digital mail door phone call campaign from Democrats. Republicans did more of the, we had saw radio, AFP Wisconsin, some cable from Jarko, a little more traditional. They're also, and they're also doing their turnout. Don't get me wrong. But Democrats ran more of a kind of a this under the radar campaign for the seat.
Okay, but why did Schachner say, and she told this to another reporter and not me, and it could have been you, was this a major anti-Trump? And she didn't go there.
She wanted to play
this
down.
Was focused on the 10th Senate district.
This is about local issues and good, clean Wisconsin values.
Yeah.
She also said that voters rejected the negativity thrown at her. We saw the Republican State Leadership Committee, for example, which basically does ads for Republican candidates for legislatures. Hit her over, I think it's like 17, 18, 20 years ago, her family had an outstanding bill for school lunches for her kids.
17 or 18?
Yeah, somewhere around $700 and was sued over it. They use that she won't pay her bills but wants you to raise yours because she's on the school board.
Yeah.
She says they rejected that kind of negativity and that it backfired. Now, who knows? We've all seen the studies that negative ads work, but maybe there was just some feeling up there of they've just had enough. And oh, by the way, it was clear from this and the 58th Assembly District results that the Republican base is depressed. Now, the 10th is one thing all by itself, right? There's focus up there. The 58th is normally a seat that
Gannon was unopposed. The late Representative Mr. Gannon was unopposed in 2016, mm-hmm. 2014, and the Democrat in that district got 43% of the vote.
This is a seat that Mitt Romney and Donald Trump both won with 2/3 of the vote. This is like deep, deep red seat. Now, the Democrats may have spent more money, may have been more active. Okay, great. But the fact that the Republican was less than 57%, that's about a base issue. And that's got Republicans worried of, look at those two things. What's this mean for November? That's a long ways away. The president's plans can get better. The tax bill can look better. The Dems can botch something like this whole thing about the shutdown, if it happens, and Washington could impact fortunes in a heartbeat. But right now, the sense is that Democrats are engaged and excited. Republicans are not, and that means good things for Democrats.
Okay, we got to turn the page, but I have one more question on the 10th Senate District. I looked it up. In 2016, there were 99,300 votes cast that Sheila Harsdorff won. And by the way, she got 63% of mm-hmm. the vote. On Tuesday, less than 1/3 of that, 32,100. Is turnout a big issue in this, or am I
But it's again, that's
am I majoring in minors?
That is a indication of the base, where the base is at. And this is a good sign for Democrats. Their base wants to turn out right now. It's an election in mid-January. They want to go to the polls and vote.
Okay. New topic. Within hours of that loss in the 10th Senate District, which prompted the governor to say, wake-up call, he proposed a special session on welfare reform specifically. Let's walk through a work requirement for healthy adults to qualify for food stamps, raising the work requirement, for food stamps from 20 to 30 hours per week, requiring food stamp participants to pass drug tests or get treatment, and finally, photo ID requirement for food stamp participation. JR, what strikes me is this comes on the heels of the Trump administration saying they're interested in all these new work waivers for Medicaid and programs mm-hmm. like food stamps. What reception do you think the governor calling a special session is going to get?
I think Republicans think this is a good issue for them. It kind of is one of those things that strikes at the heart of the average voter looking at welfare programs. Well, why shouldn't they go out and have to do something to get this benefit? Now, there was immediate Democrat reaction of, well, this is totally responsive to Tuesday. Governor Walker has a base issue. He's going to excite the base with this. You're not going to write these bills in 36 hours. These things have been out there for a while being talked about. But there is an issue right now that Governor Walker, if you look at his budget, for example, it did what? Spent more money on education. If you are a deep red conservative, did you look at the budget and go, wow, that really does excite me? I don't know if you do. But here's an issue. If there is a base, you know, problem, that might get them more excited for November. So there could be two things, that there's an appeal to swing voters, but also a base exciter in doing this.
So you connect the dots between Tuesday's loss in the 10th Senate and the governor calling a special session?
No, I don't think, you can't turn around that quickly. But there is I'm sure they've seen something in their numbers that suggests they've got to get the base excited. Here's one thing that can. Now, Governor Walker will talk about, you know, education, that he hears that people like to talk about education, you know. But if I'm somebody who looks for small government, do I think a $640 million increase in spending on education is a great thing? Maybe not. But this is a national Republican thing, too. Trump's talking about it. Ryan's talking about it. So this is going to be part of the plank I think they use come November.
And I have a question whether the legislature in the 4, 6, or 8 days remaining can do the three things the governor wants. He wants a special session on welfare reform. He wants him to pass more spending for low-income school districts. And he wants Lincoln Hills acted on. He's just overloading their agenda with only a few days left in the session.
Oh, look, if they want to do it, it's not hard to pass a bill.
True.
You know, you got to get people in a room and whip them on a vote count and get it done. But do they want to do it? Do they want to take these things on? Do they see the need? That's a big question that I have right now.
Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz got a Fiscal Bureau memo totaling up the state and local investments in the Foxconn incentive package, $4.4 million. Of course, $2.85 in state tax credits. Local government commitment is $764. Boosting the remodeling of I-94, the repairs, $408 million, yada, yada, yada. This is him taking point on what Democrats feel is going to be a major issue, if not the defining issue, in the governor's reelection.
Yeah, well,
am I overstating it?
They're trying to, well, I don't know if it's going to be the only one. They're trying to make an argument not just about to turn away from the jobs that would be created to the cost to taxpayers to create those jobs. If the Democrats just seem like they're anti, you know, job, you know, to use the phrase Republicans, it would not go over well. But doing this, talking about the cost to taxpayers, drives home the point of, is this a good deal for taxpayers? That's the case that Democrats are trying to make with this.
Okay, and let's listen to a little bit of Assembly Democratic Leader Hintz talking about the Foxconn numbers and how they add up to $4.4 billion.
The once sold project of $3 billion to taxpayers is now more in the line of $4.5 billion. And I think when you look at that, you have to remind yourself that the company will be paying no taxes. We know that the earliest that Wisconsin on the $3 billion will recoup its funding is 2043. And while the price tag should shock every Wisconsin family, the opportunity costs must be addressed. The biggest opposition that Democrats have had to this project from the beginning is look at the state's commitment going forward at a time when that money is not going to be available for higher education, is not going to be available for K-12 education, is not going to be available for infrastructure. You can't buy sustainable economic development. We realized also with the labor shortage that the governor is now going to spend $7 million trying to get people to move here.
I commend your team at WisPolitics for keeping track of all these fundraising numbers. Life is just too short for me to do that, but I'm damn glad you do it. And so the reports for the last 6 months for the, pick a number, 12, 13, 14, 16 Democratic candidates came in. And I'm using your numbers here on this graphic. And let's start first with cash on hand on January 1. Matt Flynn, $304,000. Malin Mitchell, $247,000. Then Dana Walks, $162,000. Then Kel DeRoy's, $151,000. Then Tony Evers, $115,000. And Andy Gronick, $97,000. Then Kathleen Vinehut. But what I want to get in with you is this doesn't tell the whole story.
No.
Because of Andy Gronick raised $554,000, but he loaned his campaign how much?
$450,000.
Okay. Does this mean he can't raise outside cash, that he had to put that much money of his own in it?
Well, it's definitely not going well for him so far. And what's interesting talking to people this week about these numbers are the perceptions of who had a good report and who didn't. Let's start with Matt Flynn and Malin Mitchell. Matt Flynn did put $40,000 own money in, but that was only $40,000 out of $350,000.
Yes.
It's a little bit different story. Flynn is a former state party chair for Democrats, longtime Milwaukee attorney. He has a connection to Milwaukee Money, which is a major fundraising base for anybody in Wisconsin. The question is, can he keep doing it? Is there a deeper well for him to go into to keep raising money out of that those connections to Milwaukee? If there is, he could keep doing this. Malin Mitchell raised the vast majority of his money from unions. Not a whole lot of individual
donations. He's president of the Wisconsin Association of Firefighters.
The number was a little bit inflated because the National Firefighters Union kind of doubled up. I accidentally gave him $86,000 twice, so they pulled $86,000 back. But the question for him is, can he use this union money as a springboard to getting individuals to invest in the campaign? That would raise his ceiling. If he can't, if it's all going to be union money, he would also have a ceiling that he's got to deal with. So those guys had good ones. Evers, okay. He's kind of the top tier of the race. He put out a poll last week that he was at 29%, well ahead of the rest of the pack. That's probably a name ID base type measurement in this race. Mm-hmm. But looking at his numbers, he raised more in the first 6 months of the year while running for the state superintendent than the second half of the year running for governor. Now, obviously he had actual race the first 6 months of the year for superintendent where there's more reason to give, but we were expecting him to maybe use that as a springboard to a bigger number, and didn't really happen.
Let's talk about the two people who had the least cash on hand. Mm-hmm. Mike McCabe raised $104,000, but the caveat there is he and his wife loaned the campaign $25,000?
Yes.
One-fourth of that.
He's got a cap of $200 per donation, $1,000 per donor, but he put in $25,000. He's trying to do a grassroots-fueled campaign. We're not seeing it not exploding into like Bernie Sanders-type activity yet. You know, maybe mm-hmm. it comes, but right now we're not seeing a lot of resources. Kathleen Vinehout, she basically spent as much as she raised, and the only reason why she finished in the black for the fundraising period is because she loaned the campaign $10,000 and took out a $5,000 commercial loan. That's not a great sign of what's happening with that campaign. Kelda Royce is kind of to be determined. She put about two-thirds of the money in herself, another $30,000 just from two donors. So
yes, she raised $147,000, and you say most of that came from where?
Two-thirds of the whole money overall from herself, yep. Roughly, and then another $30,000 in the two. But she also got in late December, so she had a very small window to raise money. So that's still to be determined.
And let's end with Dana Walks. He raised $514,000, but he loaned himself?
Around $265,000 just from his own pocket.
Okay.
With Walks and Gronick, the issue is they're burning through cash, and they're putting the most money in themselves. They need to develop a grassroots network of donors to fuel this. Otherwise, can they dig deeper? Will they dig deeper to keep funding things?
Okay, journalists like you and I are often accused of putting too much stock in numbers like this, that it's too simplistic. But why are these important at this stage?
We've talked for weeks about how these reports will give us a picture of who has a viable campaign, who's breaking away. Nobody broke away from the pack. We are not seeing anybody catch fire and put distance from him or herself from the rest of the pack. So when we're looking for that, who are the top three or four candidates, you can make an argument. About a half dozen people could be that top three or four right now. We're not getting a clearer picture. And oh, by the way, Paul Soglin got in after the period is over, so he's still where does he fit in? What's he going to raise? We won't know until July.
Okay, and now let's look at the governor's January 1 statement. He raised in the final 6 months, is it $3.7 million?
Something like that.
Okay, but he shows $4.2 million cash on hand. Now, because I'm a careful reader of your newsletters, you're pointing out this is $200,000 less than he had at the same point years ago?
Just a little bit of a drop-off, and the question is kind of why. He raised a little bit less. He had less cash on hand. Why? Well, if you look 4 years ago, Scott Walker was coming off the recall victory in 2012. There was some chatter about him and running for president someday. So he had this little kind of national buzz.
Yeah.
Now he's run for president briefly. Didn't go so well. He's seeking a third term, which is difficult. So maybe some of the sheen has come off of Scott Walker. Maybe his donors have been hit up, and they were hit up in 12 with the recall, 14 for the election, 15 for president. Maybe there's some donor fatigue. Maybe, because we don't know. I mean, he's still got plenty of time between now and November. He's got a healthy financial advantage, but there's just something not quite there that was there before. Now, his team is very hey, the state party's got a healthy balance. Rebecca Clayfish has good money. But Walker by himself is just not what the state. He set the standard. I mean, okay. That's just the way it is.
Okay, but on January 1, he's sitting with 4.2 and Matt Flynn, the most, 304,000.
If you look
million versus 304,000. Yes.
Collectively, the Dems, Ray, they were out ahead of where Mary Burke was 4 years ago. But Mary Burke was by herself, essentially, with some, you know, token opposition from Brett Halsey. These guys collectively just don't have the resources. So Walker's in a strong position that way. But the environment right now would make me worried if I were him, like what's going on. And Kenny is base excited and engaged, you know, by November.
Okay, new topic. Major push by both Mike Haas, the interim director, administrator of the State Elections Board, and Brian Bell, the interim administrator of the State Ethics Commission, and the commission to get them confirmed. Mm-hmm. And you and I got the huge packets. This is Mike Haas' resume. This is Brian Bell's resume. We are putting forth our vision, why we should keep our jobs. Do you? It's still uncertain to me whether Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald is going to make good on his potential scheduling votes to confirm, saying that neither one will be confirmed next Tuesday. Do you think there will be votes on that?
He told us there will be. He said there's no way they'll ever get a support to be confirmed. We've seen individual members, Republican members, say they won't support these guys. It's interesting to watch Brian Bell, Dick would basically throw the old GEB under the bus and say, I left there because there are all these problems. Yes, there was partisanship there. I came back to kind of fix things or be part of the solution to that. I got a phone call after these stories broke from Kevin Kennedy, a former GEB director, saying that's not really what was going on, that Brian left in part because he was blocked mm-hmm. for a senior management position by other people. Mm-hmm. Need that experience to move up the ladder of state government, you know, being an employee. There may have been people had, like Shane Falk, with their emotions on their sleeves, but there were these levels of safeguards against partisanship in the agency itself, including the retired judges. So Kevin's pushing back hard. I don't know if this is enough to save their jobs. Both have the commissions firmly behind them, but can they get 17 votes in that chamber next week?
And the report from the Department of Justice was trying to find who leaked secret documents mm-hmm. to the Guardian newspaper. So I interviewed this week both Mike Haas and Brian Bell, and I put that question, did you leak, directly to them. So let's listen to their answers. It's a short snippet. Let's listen. You mentioned the leak, which is the leak to the Guardian newspaper. Mm-hmm. I've got to be blunt. You didn't do that leak, right?
Right.
Do you know who did?
No idea.
Should the person who leaked be prosecuted?
Well, I think so. It's against the law. And, you know, the files of the GAB, which were transferred to the Ethics Commission by the time the leak was reported, I mean, those agencies are a victim of a crime. Somebody leaked those documents. And the Attorney General, based on his report, has not been able to determine who.
You didn't leak to the Guardian.
No.
Were the materials that were leaked nothing that you had access to?
I don't believe so, no. And we, as the staff that all work for now for the Ethics Commission, were not read into the secrecy order, so we had no way of looking at any of those records to determine what they were to even access them.
Do you think you know who leaked?
I don't know.
In addition to both of them saying they did not leak, they don't know who leaked those documents to the Guardian. Mr. Bell said this in his in what he gave lawmakers. Quote, I was not involved in any investigation conducted by GAB. And then Mr. Haas paraphrasing, he was not a member of the John Doe core prosecution team, did not plan any investigation strategy. So pretty firm denials, but as you just said, there's a real question whether they're going to be on the job a week from today.
Oh, and remember, with the confirmation vote straight up or down, we assume all 13 Democrats will be yeses. Patty Schachner won't be seated by the time they hit this vote.
She will not be, because the vote is not certified yet.
Are there four Republican votes to keep them on board? If there are, you could see a scenario where 13 Dems, if Republicans save their jobs, but if not, then what?
One critical is Senator Markline, and he said he's going to vote to not confirm mm-hmm. Mr. Haas.
Yes.
Okay. Stock picks.
So Rebecca Dowlett,
Milwaukee County Judge running for Supreme Court.
The dynamic we talked about before is how do you, if you're the middle candidate of a liberal, conservative, and left of center primary, nonpartisan primary, how do you get through? She has opened some eyes with her fundraising that she turned in this week because she has such a big financial advantage on the rest of the field. Now, that probably is an indicator that the legal community is not comfortable with the campaign that Tim Burns is running because he's being very much open about his political views. She's more the traditional fit. Michael Schrank trailed well behind. The question becomes, will that money make a difference in the primary in, what, 3 or 4 weeks? Can Tim Burns ride this progressive platform to get people excited about the turnout? And with Michael Schrank, will the conservative groups come in and spend 7 to 10 days on TV like we usually see to get into the primary? Those things I'm watching that race.
And just a note, I'll be interviewing Judge Dallet on January 30th. Okay, mixed.
So Brad Schimmel, in wave years, down ballot races sometimes get swept over the edge. Here's one that you got, the U.S. Senate race, a gubernatorial race, and he's going to be number three on the ballot. Is he susceptible to the wave if it comes? We saw fundraising numbers this week. He just eclipsed Josh Call for money raised in the last six-month period.
Yep.
Had a healthy cash on hand advantage. If you go back and look at 06, we also saw a wave year for Democrats, but WMC came in and really helped out with then-candidate J.B. Van Hollen, who beat Kathleen Falk. I get the impression, talking to folks, WMC will be there again in this race, helping Schimmel, which may help protect him in a wave or give him a shot. But I also expect to see Democratic groups spending money because he spent money, taxpayer money, on these coins with the KAED for kick-ass every day, the kind of the phrase of his administration, while there were untested rape kits. Now, it may not be a fair connection, but Democrats have made that, made it a lot, and are going to use that in campaign ads this fall.
Okay, and you've got Representative Adam Jauch as falling, but he's still in the Assembly, so why is he falling, my friend?
You lost. And anytime you lose, you get second-guessed. It's the way it is in politics. I mean, I don't care who you are. When you lose, you just get second-guessed. And so all this week I heard people saying, well, he should have done this. They should have done that. The one thing Republicans didn't do was buy broadcast TV in the Twin Cities, which is very expensive, and would have sapped resources for other races later this year. I'm not sure of all the things I heard from people. Like, why wasn't Sheila Harsour, for example, endorsing Jarko and out there within the campaign trail? Now, granted, she's a member of the administration now. Maybe she'll want to be part of that because of her new job. But all the things that I heard maybe made a difference for a couple of points, but they don't make up 10 points. It looks like this was a wave election. Does the wave sustain from now until November? Republicans are kind of happy they got the wake-up call now rather than like in September or October because there may be time to turn things around.
Yep.
But if this is what's happening, if this is really an indicator of what's going to happen in November, I'd be very nervous as a Republican right now.
And the GOP, the state party headquarters, says they're going to double the number of field offices from 4 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of news. And a programming note, the governor will be giving his State of the State message at 3 o'clock. Before that, JR, myself, and pollster Charles Franklin will be advancing and previewing that speech on Wisconsin Eye. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for December 19th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.